This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Honest Election Seattle Initiative 122 concerns public participation in government, including publicly financed election campaigns and lobbying. If enacted by voters in the November 3rd general election, the measure would limit election campaign contributions from entities receiving city contracts totaling $250,000 or more, or from persons spending $5,000 or more for lobbying, require 24-hour reporting of electronic contributions, require paid signature gatherer identification, limit lobbying by former city officials, and create a voluntary program for public campaign financing through $100 vouchers issued to registered voters funded by 10 years of additional property taxes. Should this measure be enacted into law? To help answer this question, I have as my guest Alan Durning, Executive Director of Sightline Institute and leader of the team who designed the Honest Election Seattle Initiative and drafted its legal language. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you, Diane. It's a pleasure to be with you on KEXP.
Why do we need I-122? What is the goal?
You know, big money has just flooded into our politics. Our democracy is just so overrun with big money. Think about the Koch brothers and Citizens United and the super PACs and these so-called independent expenditures. And candidates spend much of their time dialing for dollars from one percenters. And we've got to do something about it. Seattle is a good place to start. We have the opportunity here to show other cities and states what's possible by enacting a comprehensive solution to the money and politics problem at the same time as we're cleaning up city politics along the way.
What process took place in developing the Honest Election Seattle Initiative? What is its history?
You know, City of Seattle has a long history with cleaning up democracy, with demonstrating best practices and running a clean democracy that's answerable to the people. From 1979 to 1991, the city had citizen-funded elections for city council. And then in 1992, a state initiative banned that. It was an initiative run by state Republicans to try to end public funding. In 2008, the state legislature reversed that law and allowed, again, cities to begin experimenting with public funding for local campaigns. So in 2013, the Seattle City Council, largely unprompted by citizen groups, put a measure before the voters that would have introduced to Seattle a system of public funding for races for city council that was modeled on New York's system, where candidates would have gone around collecting $50 contributions and the city would have matched them, actually would have matched them sixfold. The idea is to encourage candidates to spend more time with ordinary voters. And there was no campaign for it, no campaign against it, and to everyone's surprise, it almost passed. Came within a few votes, I think 1,500 votes of passing. And at that point, a citizens movement kind of popped up. A whole bunch of organizations got interested and involved. I got interested and involved, seeing Seattle as an opportunity to pioneer a new model of clean democracy and start down the path towards solving bigger problems at the state and national levels. And that coalition includes the League of Women Voters and One America Votes and Fuse and Sightline Institute and Win-Win Network and probably a dozen other organizations representing all kinds of different segments of society in Seattle. And over the period of about a year, that coalition came together and designed this comprehensive plan, bigger than the city council put before the voters in 2013, and drew together the support to get it on the ballot. We gathered 32,000 signatures in the space of, I think, 5 weeks, and now we're gearing up to win in November.
What does the Honest Election Seattle Initiative propose? Would you give an overview of its key elements?
Absolutely. I think about it as having two main sections. First is to update Seattle's ethics, lobbying, and transparency rules to catch up with what some other cities and states are doing. And the second is this optional system of citizen financing, which you referred to with the $100 democracy vouchers. In the first category of updating our best practices, we've studied cities and states around the country and looked at the most powerful and effective controls on the influence of big money and lobbying. And so we've banned contributions from entities that spend a lot of money lobbying City Hall, and we've banned contributions from entities that make big money getting contracts from City Hall. The idea is that our candidates shouldn't be taking money from people who make a lot of money doing the city's business, or who have so much at stake that they're spending thousands of dollars lobbying elected officials. Those people can give in another election cycle, but when they're in the middle of lobbying for a rule change that's going to make their business profitable or unprofitable, they oughtn't to be doing it. In the 2013 cycle, there was a giant issue in the city about changing the regulations on taxis. You may remember this. It was a huge fight over Uber and Lyft, and Lyft was spending tens of thousands of dollars lobbying the city. And then they started throwing around thousands of dollars, giving it to campaigns, giving the maximum amount to different candidates. That's the kind of thing that shouldn't happen in the city. Candidates shouldn't be collecting money from businesses whose whole economic future depends on the regulations that those city councilors are making at that time. So that's an example of the regulations that we will introduce in this best practices section. There are other things in there as well, like that city initiative collectors, petitioners out in the street, ought to wear a badge if they're getting paid for it. That's just basic disclosure. It'll tighten the rules for financial disclosure from candidates, tighten the timelines for reporting of contributions. It'll close the revolving door so former elected officials and their top aides can't make money lobbying their former colleagues for 3 years after leaving office. All those things clean up the system. The second big category is this citizen financing system, and that's the most innovative part. That's something that Seattle would be the first in the world to demonstrate. And the idea is surprisingly simple. Candidates who want to receive public funds have to agree to certain basic rules, the rules of Honest Elections Seattle. The rules are no big money, no shady collaboration or coordination with so-called independent expenditures, which is the Seattle equivalent of PACs and super PACs, and limit their spending. They agree to a cap on how much they can spend in running for office. They also have to demonstrate that they have broad popular support by collecting hundreds of $10 contributions from residents of the city, showing that they're a viable candidate. They're not Good Space Guy. No offense to Good Space Guy, but perennial candidates like that should not be receiving public funds. And then if they agree to those terms, then they can collect vouchers from registered voters in the city. The city will, in the beginning of the year, mail coupons to every registered voter. Everyone in the voting rolls will get an envelope in the mail, just like they get their ballot in October. And in the envelope, there will be four $25 vouchers that they can sign over to candidates that they support. It will turn everyone from a dishwasher to a bank president into a $100 donor from the perspective of a candidate. It gives everyone a voice.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Alan Derning, Executive Director of Sightline Institute. Our topic is the Honest Election Seattle Initiative, I-122. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Why did you choose to propose vouchers rather than matching funds for public financing?
The voucher system is the most equalizing, the most democratic approach to distributing public campaign money. You know, in America, public opinion polls tell us that voters would rather we just banned big money entirely and regulate election spending in all kinds of ways that the Supreme Court won't let us do. The Supreme Court says money is speech, and until we can amend the Constitution or repopulate the Supreme Court with people of different minds, we have to work around that. The Supreme Court has said, however, that it's perfectly fine to dilute private money with public funds. And so that's why we have to invest a small amount of taxpayer dollars, $3 million a year, 0.062% of the city budget in a public funding system like this. And then once you've decided to do that, then there are a few different ways you can do it. You can provide matching funds, so candidates go collect small contributions and the city matches it multiple times. In New York, that's a tenfold match. In 2013 in Seattle, the proposal was a sixfold match. Or you can distribute the money in $25 increments to the voters themselves and let them decide. Reformers like Larry Lessig, a law professor from Harvard and an internet sensation, have been promoting this idea for a number of years of doing democracy vouchers, of handing out the public funds to individual citizens and letting them give it to candidates. And we studied it. We debated it hard. There was no unanimity originally. We actually did some opinion polling about it. And in the end, we decided that Seattle voters were ready to try something pioneering and different and new that would equalize people's voices to a larger extent than a matching fund system. Under a matching fund system, the contributor still has to come up with some money out of their own pocket. And that's hard for some people to do. With a voucher system, the cost to the city is exactly the same, but we make everyone's voice count the same amount. And that's why we chose it.
Would you elaborate on how vouchers might work to help promote more active citizen participation in elections?
Sure. You know, in Seattle in the 2013 election cycle, when Mayor Murray was elected, and it was a very hotly contested race, we still only had 1.5% of adults in the city of Seattle who gave even 1 cent to any political campaign for local office. Seattle is a relatively high engagement city politically compared to other places. People in Seattle pay attention to politics and they get involved, but still only 1.5% donated to any campaign at all. We think with vouchers that we're going to get that number up to higher than 10%. Not everyone will use them, of course, just like not everyone votes. We had in the recent primary that just happened in August about a 30% voter participation rate. But with vouchers, it's so much easier to invest in a candidate. And candidates will have such a strong incentive to go door to door and to be organizing house parties and going to community forums and organizing events and going to farmers markets and street festivals and everything else, because everyone they meet will be worth $100 in contribution to their campaign. The idea of it is to eliminate candidates' time spent dialing for dollars from rich people and to tell candidates through the system, just go talk to voters, hear what they have to say, tell them your thoughts, tell them your plans and visions. And if they like you, they have $100 for you. They can give it to your campaign. It changes the game completely. So the vouchers are going to dramatically increase the share of residents of the city who participate in giving to campaigns. And I think that's going to bleed over into other forms of participation as well. We'll have to wait and see. But at a minimum, it's going to dramatically increase the share of people who have invested in our campaigns by donating a voucher.
Can citizens give additional money to a candidate beyond their vouchers?
Sure. Anyone who wants to put their own skin in the game is welcome to do so. Candidates have to agree to strict limits on how much they can take from any individual contributor. For city council races, it's no more than $250. For mayor, it's $500 that individuals can give in addition to their voucher. We don't want to stamp out people giving their own money to campaigns. We just want to make it a game in which everyone can participate, regardless of whether they are a programmer for Amazon or a custodian in Amazon.
What processes have been put in place to prevent fraud?
You know, I was initially concerned that distributing $25 coupons, $25 coupons to every voter in the city was going to create problems about fraud. You know, you start imagining someone will go around offering $5 at every door for the $25 coupons and you get into a worrisome scenario. But the more we thought about it, we were able to design that problem out of existence. Here's what we did. Buying, selling, or otherwise trafficking in vouchers is made a criminal penalty. You could go to jail, just like voter fraud. It's like buying and selling votes. You don't want to mess with taking the chances. And how much money is at stake? You know, it's not very much money that you could get from selling one anyway. Secondly, severe penalties for campaigns that are involved in any abuse or fraud of the voucher system. They might have to give all the money back. They might have to give the money back plus pay penalties. They might be disqualified from the system. There might be criminal penalties brought against them. So the penalties for misbehavior in the voucher system are very high, similar to those for voting fraud, which, by the way, is a myth. Voting fraud doesn't happen. There are more Americans who escape from maximum security prisons in the last 35 years than there have been people who actually committed voter fraud. And we think that voucher fraud will be similarly non-existent. Finally, as a backup protection, the entire system is transparent. The assignment of vouchers will be public record, just like any contribution you make of $25 or more is reported to the State Public Disclosure Commission and the City Ethics and Elections Commission and is posted online. So if there were any pattern of abuse, then everyone can look for it. Citizen activists can study the lists. Journalists opposing campaigns can study the lists. It'll be like a game of cards where everyone's hand is turned up. A little bit boring, but nobody can cheat.
To what extent do you think candidates will actually want to participate in the system and not accept the larger contributions?
You know, Diane, that's a great question. Because of the Supreme Court rulings like Citizens United, we can't require candidates to take the public money instead of dialing for dollars the old-fashioned way. All we can do is try to create a system that is attractive enough that they will want to do it. And I think we've designed a system that most candidates will opt into. Not everyone will. People who can write their own ticket will probably just do that. And unfortunately, legally, there's nothing we can do to stop that. But we think it's going to be easy enough to collect vouchers that candidates would rather do that than spend 3 or 4 hours a day calling rich people and asking for $500 checks. The other thing that we did is we lowered the contribution limit that even candidates who do not participate in the system, the regular candidates running the old-fashioned way, can't get $700 checks anymore. They can only get $500 checks. So we put a little pressure on them, making the pot a little bit less sweet on the private funding side and making the vouchers worth enough that they can collect enough money that way. And they can also still collect private contributions up to $250 in addition to the vouchers. So we think that most candidates are going to opt into it. I should say, though, that if they don't, the initiative is designed so that the Seattle Ethics and Elections Commission, which is governed by an independent body of Seattle residents, will have the authority between election cycles to adjust the program so that they could give people 5 vouchers instead of 4, or they could raise or lower the spending limits, so that they can adjust the system and entice even more participation from citizens and from candidates.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Alan Derning, Executive Director of Sightline Institute. Our topic is the Honest Election Seattle Initiative, I-122, which will be submitted to voters in the November 3rd general election. You recently published a Sightline report, Who Funds Seattle's Political Candidates? You've alluded a bit to this earlier, but what were the findings of the report?
Yeah, we wanted to look at who actually pays for campaigns for mayor and city council and city attorney in Seattle. So we studied the 2013 election, and we got the complete list of all the contributors, and we mapped them, because political contributions are public record, so you could get the addresses and names of every donor. And we mapped them across the city. And then we used other data from the census and other sources to learn about what those people's characteristics were. And what we learned was that a huge share of the money going to political candidates comes from the top 20% of residents of the city, or the people who live in the richest neighborhoods. Candidates seem to be spending most of the time fundraising from neighborhoods that are populated by people who are affluent, who are overwhelmingly white, and interestingly, who live in new homes. The places where if you're a candidate going door for door looking for $700 checks, it seems like maybe a reasonable rule of thumb would be to go to places that have nice views of mountains and water, which makes sense. I mean, in Seattle, view homes are more expensive and people with more money are more likely to give you contributions. And nothing against them. They should be allowed to participate in our system. But our candidates shouldn't be spending most of their time calling on and visiting and going to fundraisers in those homes. They should be visiting all parts of the city.
How do you predict passage of I-122 would affect who contributes?
Initiative 122 will spread the pattern of political giving across the city. Our most affluent neighborhoods will still give probably more than others because they have more to give. But candidates will depend on small contributions in the form of vouchers from residents of every part of the city. It will light up the whole map, so to speak, political influence, beginning to give everyone a real voice in local politics.
How much money would be available for vouchers in each election?
The funding stream for Honest Election Seattle is the smallest property tax in city history. It's $3 million a year. Elections happen every other year, so there's $6 million going into the kitty. That fund has to pay for the administration of the system, like it costs something to print and mail vouchers to everyone, and you need about 3 staff to check the vouchers and allocate the funds and so on. But the remainder of the funds, probably about $5 million, will be available for funding in that election cycle. And we think in most years that the system will actually spend substantially less than that. We think that the funds will accumulate in the system and pay for the most expensive election cycles, which are years when there's a race for mayor. In fact, because we are so confident that there's going to be plenty of money to support all the candidates who want to run, we wrote into the provision rules allowing the city council to decrease the size of the levy if they don't need all of it, or even not to collect the levy if they want to fund it from general operating funds of the city. Again, this is 0.062% of the city's overall budget. It's hardly anything. State law more or less requires us to put a levy before the voters to fund this, and so we did, but we also left the option open to the council to not even impose the levy.
How much would the levy cost an individual citizen?
To a homeowner of a typically priced $400,000 house in Seattle, it's about 65 cents a month, about $10 a year. And so typical home has a couple of people living in it, so it's half that. It's such a small amount of money that nobody's going to notice it.
What kind of response are you getting so far to the Honest Elections Seattle initiative? What kind of feedback?
You know, professional fundraisers don't like it. Almost everyone else does. The polls are very strongly in our favor. We expect to win in November, unless the big moneyed interests pour a lot of money in and confuse the issue and muddy the water. The League of Women Voters and One America Votes and Progreso, the Latino Community Fund's Political Action Committee, and the Asian Pacific Islanders Coalition, and about a dozen other nonprofit progressive organizations in Seattle have endorsed it. Four sitting city council members, Nick Licata, Councilman O'Brien, Councilmember Sawant, and Council President Tim Burgess, have endorsed the measure, along with, I think, 14 of the candidates who are running for city council offices. Jim McDermott, our congressman, has endorsed it. Frank Chopper, our Speaker of the State House, half a dozen other state representatives have endorsed the measure. It is winning huge support across the city. But there is a chance that we'll have a substantial pushback from the big money interests who are used to having their say in city politics.
What would you say to those who say that Honest Elections Seattle forces people to make a political contribution to candidates they may not agree with?
I think that's a legitimate critique of other forms of public funding. Portland used to use a system where once your candidate had qualified by collecting a lot of small contributions, the candidate would just get a big grant. You know, they just get a $50,000 check from the city. And in a matching grant system, like Seattle voted on in 2013 and almost but did not adopt, the city is giving out money in pretty large checks to match what small donors give. But a voucher system, the voters themselves are deciding who's getting their money. So no one is giving their voucher to someone they don't like. They're giving vouchers to people that they support.
What will be the administrative costs to implement the Honest Elections Seattle initiative?
It's surprisingly affordable. It's actually a very simple system. Because Seattle already has a vote-by-mail infrastructure, and we can piggyback on that vote-by-mail infrastructure to do the voucher system, it's going to cost between $250,000 and $500,000 a year, we estimate, to administer the whole program. And the biggest expense is actually printing and mailing vouchers to 415,000 registered voters in the city of Seattle. We think it's about 3 paid staff members year-round to operate the system, which in the context of the more than 10,000 people who work for the city of Seattle, it's astonishingly small. This is like the size of the city arborist program. And I like the arborist program. I think we should have a strong arborist program, but I also think we could afford to have an Honest Elections Seattle program.
You said a bit about this earlier, but how well has public funding of elections worked in other places in the U.S. where it has been tried?
You know, we at Sightline did an evaluation of New York City's public funding system, and it's a fascinating example because it shows the degree to which a program like we've proposed here in Seattle, the Honest Elections Seattle Initiative, spreads political participation across the city and allows candidates who are neither rich nor have a network of rich friends, it allows them to run a real campaign, a competitive campaign, and sometimes win. So that the composition of city councils in New York and in other cities with public funding include more women and more people of color, fewer rich people. So we think that it's going to be all to the good in all of those ways, and surprisingly inexpensive.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Honest Elections Seattle, despite what its opponents will tell you, is a very simple system. It tightens up the rules on lobbying, on the revolving door, and on transparency and disclosure, and it gives every voter in the city a real voice by making them a donor. Money talks, and this allows everyone to talk.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Alan.
Thank you for having me, Diane.
You were just listening to Alan Durning, Executive Director of Sightline Institute. For more information, check on the web at honestelectionsseattle.org. Again, that's honestelectionsseattle.org. The Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.